series Discovering the Upper World is based on articles from the book Kabbalah Lamatchil, Kabbalah for Beginners, which you can buy according to the details on the screen. We are continuing with the article The Essence of the Wisdom of Kabbalah by Ba'ala Sulam in the book Kabbalah Lamatchil, page 23. We are in the section The Corporeal Terms and the Physical Names in Books of Kabbalah. We've already said that we have a problem with how to express our sensations. What are we talking about? We're talking about emotions, sensations. We are made of a will to receive, made of five senses in which we acquire impressions. We feel something. Next to it, our mind evolves, the brain helping us to understand what we feel and how we can improve our sensation or what we feel. When we feel, we evolve in our vessels of reception, in our sensation. There are no words to sensations. What the Kli feels, how do we call it? In the wisdom of Kabbalah, we name according to measurements. If you know, for example, what your Kli is, what kind of Kli you have right now, because it might be more, it might be less. If you know your Kli, then you can measure the filling in the Kli, the light in it. And the Kli and the light together are then the name of that person or that state which is attained. That's what we call in the wisdom of Kabbalah. But in order to convey what Kabbalists attain and feel from one to the other, they either use these names, the language of Kabbalah, or they have to name. Where do they get names from? So they take names from our world. This is called the language of the branches, because the spiritual world, upper world, projects itself in a replica. It into this world, and so the substance here is corporal, but everything present in this world, meaning every action, stems from spirituality, because they come into our matter, we no longer feel that they are spiritual actions, but the connection between them, the ratio between them, their reciprocal influence is actually spiritual. It just appears opposite to us because the substance is opposite. Here it is corporeal and there it is spiritual. And that confuses us. If we want to see the spiritual world from this world, we can't do that because in every way in this world, the difference between this world and the spiritual world is, well, kind of doubly opposite in every dimension. That's why we can't say that if that's black, then there it's white. It's black and white, and bitter and sweet, and true and false, and the thousand things like that all put together and how they all interconnect. So the picture between spirituality and corporeality is completely inconsistent, there's complete discrepancy, but because there's a root above that operates on some branch below, we can say about the root, we can designate it by the name of the branch. In our world we have the name of the branch, so we can attach it to the root and name it this way. So in spirituality we have a dictionary. Actually, this dictionary is built according to our dictionary. And this language is called the language of the branches. A language built according to the branches. In our world, where we use names of roots, of branches to name roots. That's how Kabbalists communicate. And that's how all the holy books are written. The Torah, the prophets, the scriptures, a lot of books are written like that, like history books or geography books or like some a human society with neighbors fighting like in the Talmud and in Shulchan Aruch, the Jewish code of law, that you have to do things this way, that way, and past this history and everything written in these holy scriptures, we understand that the holy books are holy because holy, kadosh, means spiritual. And secular means corporal. And so although the books seemingly talk about Abraham walking here, walking there, and Isaac and Jacob, the sons of Israel, maybe the ox hits the cow, whatever, neighbors fighting, and then the temple and all that. We understand that this is holy scriptures, meaning behind the corporal vocabulary, there stands a spiritual process, which they want to explain to us, but they don't have a choice but to explain it in corporal words. So the vocabulary is taken from this world, but the understanding should relate to the spiritual world. But who can imagine spiritual things? If I'm in this world and I understand these words in their corporal meaning, how can I attach any word, each word, to something spiritual, to what it is in spirituality? I can't, because I don't know what it talks about there. A horse. What is a horse in spirituality? I don't know. That's why Kabbalists wrote this vocabulary for themselves, obviously. But we use this language and these stories from this world to the spiritual world in order to take power from there that corrects, the light that reforms, and nothing more. We shouldn't think that we can understand what happens in spirituality. It is a different nature. It's totally opposite. We should only want the power to come and correct us. And to the extent that it will correct us, we will begin to see not the vocabulary, not the words, but what they are about, what stands behind the words. We will see the objects, the entities, movings, the actions, etc. Just like I read a book and I can imagine what happens in this world, I have images and pictures from the story that I can imagine because I know all the details, all the complexity in found in the story, the emotions, the insights, everything. Similarly, it'll be in the spiritual world if we see and feel it just a little bit. So Baal Salam explains about it. Yes, the corporal terms and the physical names in books of Kabbalah. I'll just give you a few four words so that we can understand it a little better, that you'll understand why I explained it before we read it. Any reasonable person will understand that when dealing with spiritual matters, much less godliness, we haven't any words or letters with which to contemplate. This is because our entire vocabulary is but combinations of letters of our senses and imagination. Yet, how can they be of assistance where there are neither imagination nor senses? Meaning, how is it possible that behind words of this world, we will imagine, we will see parts or actions, things that are in the spiritual world. It's impossible. If they're so spiritual, why do they have to use the most corporealist? I've said, no, they're not writing about corporeality, but they're using the corporeal language. First of all, why don't they communicate in spirituality? How do you know they don't? What does it mean to communicate? How did you even come to that word? Is it like you calling someone? Of course there are connections among all the parts of Adam HaRishon. We are all we are only fragments of souls, and the connection exists just like there's a connection in this world where we feel each other more or less and build communication systems. In the spiritual world we don't need communication unnatural communication systems like a phone system or anything like that. In the spiritual world, the connection is simple. It's according to equivalence of form. To the extent that one in one's corrected kalim is like another, to that extent they are together. They are on the same, in the same place. Say, for example, let's take everything in me. A desire, the thought, my actions, everything in me. And let's take you. Your desires, thoughts, and actions. If in a part of me and a part of you, we are the same, identical. We want the same thing, we think about the same thing, we do the same thing. Toward what? When is that possible? When we have a goal, the same goal, and we understand what that goal is. The goal is that our desire and thought and action will be, to some extent, one. If that happens, and we have obtained the zikut in the goal, even to say, even just 20% of our desires and thoughts, then in that part between us, we unite. We are together as one body. If and with the goal, it's called Israel, and the Creator are one. The goal is the Creator, and we, you and I, came. We wanted to reach Him, so we connected together. We joined together. So for that, we need to communicate, to connect. We don't need to connect because we are together, the same intention, the same thought, the same action. Everything that happens in me happens in you. We don't even understand what it is. We don't get how, to what extent it becomes one, and it has to be with all the souls with no exceptions, as one man in one heart, in heart and mind. You say, how do Kabbalists communicate with one another? They don't need some exterior communication with the same thoughts and desires that are corrected and that are in the Creator, instilled in the Creator, where they have reached equivalence of form with Him. There, they're all one. It's like one body. Should my hand understand what the mind thinks and what kind of order it gives it, etc.? Only a sick body can do like that, where the mind does one thing and the hand another. That's the corrupted body, meaning where its parts are separated like our separated souls. But in a corrected body, every cell knows about how the whole body should function and what it should provide it. So there are no communication problems among Kabbalists. Besides, in order to help each other, reach the communication, and be in that correct communication. They still write to one another because they write from generation to generation and for many generations. And Kabbalists grow too. When a child is born, he's not a Kabbalist. He's got a point in the heart which he will develop. Who knows if he'll be a Kabbalist or not. So, they need books from exterior means, not internal. In the soul, so that these external means will help them, all of them, reach their internal degrees. If great Kabbalists over the generations, everywhere in the world, do they interpret the same thing? If they feel the same thing, they interpret the same thing. They will give the same interpretation to the same thing? No. Because the interpretations depend on the language. Some wrote in Arabic, some wrote in Yiddish, some wrote in German, in many languages. But is it the same interpretation? They also conveyed it in a different way because there's a difference in the souls. Some souls come from the general light, some from a particular light, from the surrounding light, from the inner light. Some souls have a different purpose. It's just like there are different parts in the bodies with different functionalities. If you examine the liver or the lungs, you might say it's not a part of the same body. Let's say someone comes who doesn't know physiology or anatomy or anything like that. You say, look, there's this part and that part. He will not understand that they belong to the same body. It's a completely different functionality. It's all the information, all the tests, everything is completely different. Only afterwards we grow smart enough to know that it has to be like that. They might even have to be contradicting or opposite, but they have to work in harmony with the right connection between them. So every Kabbalist comes from a different place in the general body of Adam Rishon. Of course, on the one hand, they know how to complement the other, but when they write from the private to the general. So it depends on how they express it. There are many things here. You take books of Kabbalists, first of all, thank God we have a history of several thousand years. Of course, they convey it in a different way. Look at the Zohar, for example. Greek words, Aramaic, etc. Things that at that time were accepted as a spoken language, so they used it. And what happened afterwards, in the Middle Ages, for example, or the way it's written today, can you compare what Rav Kook writes, like in a philosophy course in university, it's so superficial, seemingly, is with what Rambam wrote, what Moses wrote? He wrote a story. What did he write? A novel. That's it. Can you compare it with the writings of the Ari? How the Ari writes, the way he expresses himself. Mathematically, in a very mathematical form, very accurate, this goes here, that goes there. Even when he doesn't use the language of Kabbalah, when he doesn't use a technical language, but when he speaks a little differently, even there, it's still a different language. The Zohar is all picturesque. People go, sit, talk, there's a sun, the moon, all kinds of figures and forms that you can imagine. It's very different. The character of each of them is also different. But they all aim at the same thing. They feel the same. But they each feel that thing differently. You and I are in the same world. We see the same things outside of us, yes? We see the same things, right? Can we compare how different we feel it, how different we perceive it? Each person is unique. That's why all the books, there are more or less similar, but there are some that are very different. How can you take the Zohar and the books of the Ari? And the Ari is an incarnation of Rabbi Shimon. How can you compare them? How can you see the connection between them? Well, Ari Bala Sulam is actually a very similar language. Relatively. Yes. Let's move on. Paragraph even. Even if we take the subtlest word that can be used in this context, meaning the word upper light, or even simple light, it is still borrowed and lent from the light of the sun, or a candle, or a light of contentment one feels upon resolving some great doubt, or a new invention. How can we use them in context of the spiritual and godly? They offer the examiner nothing more than falsehood and deceit. So it's as if the beginner doesn't have a choice. What do you want? If you write light, he'll imagine light. If you write kli, he'll imagine a vessel, a cup, or a pitcher, or whatever, or a wrench, or whatever. It's also a kli. How can we use? How can we understand the spiritual through this corporal vocabulary? Continuing to read, it is particularly so where one needs to find some ratio in these words to help in the negotiation customary in the research of the wisdom. Here, one must be very strict and accurate using the definitive descriptions for the eyes of the observers. Should the wise fail with but a single unsuccessful word, he is certain to confuse and mislead the readers. They will not understand at all what he is saying there, before it, afterward, after it, and everything connected to that word. This is known to anyone who examines books of wisdom. Meaning it's even worse, Bala Sulam says. If you err in just a few words and misunderstood them, you are so confused that you're better off not starting. So how can I even begin reading something or listening to something or understanding something? Of course, I come from this world with my load, with my vocabulary, by which I understand the world, and now I'm told, no, your vocabulary, leave it, but throw away this world. How can I do that? My words are connected to everything I am used to in this world. I'm used to connecting to them. No. If you connect to these words from now on, when you study Kabbalah, if you connect the same things that belong to those names that you're used to connect to them, you will be confused and nothing will come out of it. So, what's the solution? Thus, one should wonder, how is it possible for Kabbalists to use false words in order to explain the interconnection of this wisdom? Meaning, Kabbalists don't have a choice. They cannot take another dictionary, another vocabulary. How do you call a phenomenon in spirituality when it's only emotional? What are you going to do? Call it, say, ah, ooh, oh. What can you invent? What kind of code can you invent? Also, it is known that there is no definition through a false name, for the lie has no legs and no stance. Meaning, if I begin to attach names, numbers, or whatever to spiritual phenomena, this is called unfounded basis. This is false. The vocabulary, the word, has to stem from the essence of the thing that I want to point to in with that word. Indeed, here you need to have prior knowledge of the law of root and branch by which the worlds relate to one another. meaning we have a law of connection between the worlds. Each world is built, as I wrote here, the upper world and the lower world. Both are actually a complete replica in their every detail in this world. Yes, the trees, the oceans, the nights, people, distances, time, space, and motion. It's different there from the way it is here. People there are different than here. Everything that we can do and build in this world exists there too. And they say that even more. Moreover, everything we see here in this world and feel and think and build and do, all of it, we don't build and do and see. We only discover the spiritual world a little more. We come a little closer to it. And that seems to us as if we discover new things, build and do something new. That is how much there is nothing in our world that is not from the spiritual world. Because between the upper world and this world, there is nothing but concealment. When I discover the upper world a little more, and more and more, even now, while I'm still not conscious of it, meaning there is no difference between the worlds. The upper world and my world is actually my own inner sensation. If I feel the same thing in my egoistic kelim, this is called my world, this world. If I gradually replace my tools into a different perception, an altruistic one, this is called approaching the spiritual world and entering it. But before me, there is the same thing. It is only my perception that gradually changes. That's why I have 613 desires. Those are the same desires, but in each of them, the sensation changes a little more and a little more and a little more. That's why we should only imagine how in every desire, every thought, what we feel if we are more spiritual. Now we can understand why Kabbalists invented this specific language and presented it to us. So that through these words, through our vocabulary, where I am right now, I just have to push it, want to be in spirituality more, interpret all the terms, all the concepts in a more spiritual manner. So with the same vocabulary, I enter what used to be concealed and is now revealed. With the same vocabulary. And then there's no difference. I read poetry or a novel or the book of Zohar. This was written by someone who was in this world, and that was written by someone who moved up into the spiritual world, upper world. But with all of his 613 desires for his entire soul, he felt a higher degree. That's it. That is why the language of the branches is, if I only try and interpret it correctly, each word in its spiritual formation, it's as if it draws me into spirituality. In itself, it is like an engine towards spirituality. That's why Baal HaSulam writes in the introduction to Talmud HaSfirot that we must interpret each and every word in its spiritual form. Because if you try and you have to really exert on it, you have to constantly maintain concentration. What this means in spirituality, what that means in spirituality, it's like an intellectual effort. You have to think about it. It's not emotional. On the contrary, it goes against your emotions. But by forcing yourself to imagine spirituality instead of corporeality that you naturally feel by reading, when reading, you instill yourself, you push yourself into spirituality by force. And then, so now we can understand the kind of benefit that language gives us. It's not why did they not invent something else. It gives you 613 lanes by which you from corporeality rise to spirituality. You just have to interpret it more like more in spiritual terms, the meaning of the words and the actions that are explained there. Take the Pentateuch. Stop reading it like a child or like children that have grown old, and start interpreting it more in a spiritual sense. And you'll see how you gradually become detached from this world and enter a different reality. With the same words. And the fact that we still don't feel what happens behind these words makes no difference. It gives you room for work. I don't feel it, but I have to force myself to imagine what it is. And then I'm drawn. You're drawn to it. You force yourself into a higher degree. These are good exercises. I recommend them. Well, the law of root and branch by which the worlds relate to one another. Kabbalists have found that the form of the four worlds, named Atilut, Briya, Yetzirah, Asiyah, beginning with the first and highest world, called Atilut, and ending in this corporal, tangible world, called Asiyah, is exactly the same in every item and event. It means that everything that eventuates and occurs in the first world is found unchanged in the second world below it too. It is likewise in all the worlds that follow it down to this tangible world. There is no difference between them, merely a different degree perceived in the substance of each world's reality. The substance of the items of the first, uppermost world is purer than the substance of the lower ones, and the substance of the item of the reality of the second world is coarser than that of the first, but purer than that of the lower degree. It continues similarly down to this world before us, whose substance of the items of reality is coarser and darker than all the worlds preceding it. However, the shapes and the items of reality of all their occurrences come unchanged and equal in every world, both in quantity and in quality. We said that the Kli that was built by the Upper Light consists of five parts. Shosh Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet. Therefore, in order to disintegrate the light from the Kli, and detach the light from the Kli entirely, we have 5 degrees from the state of Ein Sof, where the Kli is entirely filled with light. We have 5 degrees of descent. These 5 degrees are called worlds. Ak, Atzilut, Briya, Yetzira, Asiya. And here is this world. Each world is in fact a diminution of the light, a lessening of the light, and the emptying of the Kli, a greater emptiness of the Kli. Let's say here the Kli is smaller than in Ein Sof. In Ein Sof we have 5 parts. Here in Adam Kadmon we have the same Kli. Here we have 4 parts. 3, 2, 1. And here we have 0. Just a point. He's writing Nekuda, point. That's how the Kli lessens. Its light in it lessens. And it comes to us, the point of this world, the state of this world. But every detail that exists in the Kli remains. All the details remain. But their power changes. Meaning, here the Kli in Ein Sof has 613 desires, and here it's got 613 desires. A Kli cannot have less than that. 613. In every place. And our point too contains 613 desires, but they are like a point. Just like in a seed, you have all the elements of a mature person that will evolve. All the elements, all the details. All you need is more energy, like the meat, yes, the flesh, more power. And this additional power, here the Creator listened, that came from above, and we have to, from below upward, by ourselves, want to grow. We have to come to want to grow and acquire the power for that. This is done through the man, through the request from below upward. Yes, give me the power for correction, for fulfillment, and then it happens. Of course, we don't have the powers, but the demand has to be on our part. That's what we learned before, from above downward and from below upward. This comes from above, and we have to rise from below upward through our choices and our desires. And then, from this single point of desire, which we now cannot speak of its details, we don't feel great desires in it, 613 desires. We feel some desire for spirituality. We want something to happen. We can't even express it. From that evolves a Kli called spiritual Kli, a soul. Right now, all we have is a point. And what we imagine of ourselves, that we exist in our body and mind, it's an animal, the body and mind, or soul, just like animals have, nothing more. Yes, go ahead. Again. It is likewise in all the worlds that follow it down to this tangible world. She went backwards a little bit. Oh, no quantity, same quantity and same quality without changes. The difference is that in all the olamot, Akatilut Briya Yetzirah Asiya, you have a spiritual substance. What is the spiritual substance? Bestowal. From above downward. Only our substance is reception. Is opposite. That is why each and every world in spirituality is similar to the other, not only in the details in each world, but also in the essence. But this is more and that's less. Whereas the difference between the worlds above this world and between this world, the difference is in the substance itself, but the details remain the same. We feel this world is filled with things, actions of all sorts, all corresponding to spirituality. There is nothing in this world that doesn't come from above. But how it happens above compared to this world, we cannot picture it. More? They compared it to the conduct of a seal and its imprint. All the shapes found in the seal are transferred perfectly in every detail and intricacy to the imprinted object. So it is with the worlds, where each lower world is an imprint of the world above it. Hence, all the forms found in the higher world are meticulously copied in both quantity and quality to the lower world. Thus, there is not an item of reality or an occurrence of reality found in a lower world that you will not find its likeness in the world above it, as identical as two drops in a pond. And they are called root and branch. That means that that item found in the lower world is deemed a branch of its pattern found in the higher world, being the roots of the lower item, as this is where that item in the lower world was imprinted and made to be. That was the intention of our sages when they said, "You haven't a blade of grass below that has not a fortune and a guard above that strikes it and commands it to grow." It follows that the root, called fortune, compels it to grow and robe its attributes in quality and quantity and quality, as with the seal and the imprint. This is the law of root and branch in every item of reality, in every single world, relating to the world above it. Questions, please. In our world, there are many terms that are artificial or abstract. Is there also an upper root to them? Or let's take a scientist who lives in science, in these concepts. For him, they are more tangible than these things. Can he see the spiritual world behind them, behind these terms and their roots? I don't know what kind of science you're talking about. If this scientist acquires the sixth sense, develops a soul from his point, so that the point will expand, and in it there will be an empty place that's ready to acquire spiritual feeling, then behind the matter he'll see spirituality. If he doesn't have this clue, how can he see spirituality behind it? The substance ends in the substance. That's what the scientists see these days, at the end of science. It's not the end, there's more to discover. But they seemingly see that the more progress things or advanced things are hidden or imperceptible to us, meaning it, regardless of the auxiliary tools that we build, all these tools only add, this like microscope, telescopes, they add to they expand the range of our senses, yes? They expand them, but they cannot change the essence of our perception. That's why a scientist can't see behind matter more than matter itself. More questions? Yes. He writes about fortune, kinds of things. No, fortune is an upper force that comes down from Arihant bin Datsilut, where it drips. Mazal comes from the word nozel. Fortune comes from the word dripping in Hebrew, where drops of wisdom come dripping from above. So that through these drops, so as to awaken the lower ones through these drops, to awaken towards spirituality. That's why it's called fortune, from the word nozel in Hebrew, dripping. It's not the kind of fortune we think of in our world, yes? I'm lucky or unlucky. Luck, fortune is when a blow comes from above, because it comes dripping, a little good and a little bad, and you understand that it draws you to that light in Arihant bin Datsilut, which is the root of all fortunes, of every awakening. A fortune, the real fortune, is awakening to spirituality that is sent to a person from above. If he perceives it correctly, this is called being lucky, being fortunate. Otherwise, it's not. Good luck, bad luck, From above, there is nothing more than an awakening for progress. Yes. Regarding the previous part we read, when we disseminate the wisdom regarding the corporeal things, to what extent can it damage the corporeality of the name if we speak of it in more abstract manner? How can it help our dissemination? Is that what you're asking? Why harm it? Everything you explain about the truth adds. It adds. On the contrary, if we can explain to ourselves and to others that the holy books do not speak of what happens on earth, how you should pay to the owner of an ox or whatever, how to do something in corporeality, but it all comes in order to, as Ibn Ezra writes in his interpretation of the Torah, it comes only in order to correct the heart. And the Torah, yes, I've created the evil inclination, I've created the Torah as a spice. That's where it comes from, not to study something else. It's not to get along in this world. In this world, we can never get along, get on. Get on, meaning rise above this world to spirituality. That's why there's a descent from above downward, so that we will rise back up to Insof. And if we explain that this is how we should read the books, is help, so as to try and understand them in a more sublime manner than this world, of course it will be helpful. There's a Kabbalist like Baal Sulam who writes articles and puts them in a paper stand. He writes them for everyone. Does he at some point stop using the language of branches? How can that be? So what does he use? A language that people can understand. For example, Matan Torah, the revelation of godliness. No, sorry. If I explain about phenomena of humanity, society, or we who are below the barrier, our language is our language. I use spoken language and regarding the place that I am referring to, this world. If I say we have to organize a society and study this way and do that, etc., then we're talking about this world. But if I'm talking about spirituality, sfirot, but supreme worlds, etc., then there I have a problem. I have a difficulty explaining to you these concepts. So behind each word there should be an explanation that you shouldn't think it's like this, like that, but it is rather like this, like that. And interpret every word according to the spiritual meaning is very difficult, but every time we try to do that, that's in fact our work, because you raise your picture from corporeality to spirituality. It's very important. Read the introduction to Zohar Mordechai Sefirot, the end of it. The last item, 156, yes? Alright, 155 and then 156. Yes. Regarding the root and branch and scientists. Scientists discover things. Do they reach those discoveries because they exerted even after 20 years? And because the effort is connected to spirituality, they come to it because Olaf says, we learned in the article Freedom of Choice, the freedom that no one in this world has a single thought or action that is free unless it is aimed at toward the returning to the root of the soul, to the world itself, to that place where he is rooted. Other than that direction and working toward that, there is no free choice and free movement to any person. So all the scientists, anyone you take, they're only performing commandments that awaken in them from their genes, their Rashimot, and the environment that compels them to do so, which is also guided from above. In our world, there is nothing that awakens by itself. So what do scientists discover? They don't discover. They have to discover this world in a way that it'll awaken to spirituality to this or that extent. According to that, they discover it. They discover the atom bomb. They discover good things according to what they need in order to awaken people to be this, to advance towards spirituality and come to that. Nothing more. And it comes from above without any ability for anyone to determine anything. The only choice, the only movement of a person, independent movement, is only in reaching the root of his soul in a pre-paved way, from above downward. When we descended, now we have to rise by the same path. We shouldn't imagine that there is any free action to anyone, to any scientist who discovers it. Of course not. It appears because humanity, either in a good way or a bad way, must now be prompted toward the goal. A question from Karma about that? Right, read it. The question is this. Is there a name? Either Liran or Liron. Can it be a situation where an individual soul is completely altruistic and still retains its body? Of course. First of all, it's a mitzvah. And second, in this world too, there are people who have a drive to ruin their bodies. Kabbalists, what, they want to ruin their bodies? No, on the contrary. The connection of the corrected soul through its body with all the other bodies, where the souls are not corrected, who are in this world, these people, yes? And so the connection between them and a Kabbalist in this world, in the physical world, in the physical body, and at the same time in the spiritual world with his soul, is, how should I put it, is a priceless invention. Priceless. In spirituality, there is a connection only between souls and only to the extent that they equalize in form with respect to the Creator, as we described it here. Remember? You and I, if we have parts in us in which we are like the Creator, in those parts we are connected. In this world, we're completely detached, all of us. That's why we need a body, meaning an additional system to connect with one another. Otherwise, just imagine if on an egoistic level here, we would be completely just with our souls. What would that be? We would be completely detached without any possibility or hope of ever bonding and building a kli and reaching spirituality. That's why we have this special klipa. That's the corporeal reality. It's called guf, called body. It's not a body. What we see is not a body. It's a desire in this that appears to us in this way. And through it, we can connect to one another. We can communicate with one another. We can bond. We can even do more than bonding. We can work in the body like in the soul. We can connect. We can have children. We can help each other. We can kill each other. It doesn't matter. But we can be in contact. We can be interdependent. We have that place, that state from which we can begin our spiritual journey freely. I live in my body. I want it. If I want spirituality, I have it. If I don't, I don't have it. It's like a standby state right before the spiritual journey. So if a Kabbalist is both in spirituality and in this world, through the body he can connect to us and can bring us his Torah, his teachings, his method, his means. His guidance. Otherwise, how would we communicate with him? He's there, I'm here. How? Now, through the body, through the verbal expression, through the books he writes, I can begin, because I don't have a choice. Perhaps he can probably do with me whatever he wants. But the way from above downward, from below upward, has to be with when I want it first. So in order to have a desire, the Creator awakens the point. But other than the point, it's all my work. It's up to me, so I need help from outside. From outside of me, I need someone to come and within my kalim, wherever I am, help me. Help me out. And that's the work of a Kabbalist in this world. As it says, the Creator created, planted in every generation, planted them. Without them, we wouldn't be reaching correction. Without Baal Salam, what would we do? We would wear red strings or bow before trees or whatever. Without these books, of course. The connection through this world is we don't know the power and importance of this invention. In the spiritual world, it all advances by spiritual rules. There's no problem. From this world, from double concealment and single concealment, when we go through it, by that we create our kelim. Well, we'll talk about it. I think it's time to end the lesson, right? That completes our lesson. Thank you very much, all our viewers, and have a good day. Good night.